Welcome to What's Your Deal? I'm your host, Ariana Lenarski. This is the podcast where we read tarot for special guests to find out where they've been and where they're going. And with me today is Hallie Bateman, one of my most favorite people. Hi, Hallie.
Hi.
She is an illustrator and a writer and one of my best friends. Right?
Yeah.
I had to check in with you. I had to check in with you to make sure that was true.
You were a bridesmaid.
Oh, right. I was a bridesmaid, yeah.
And on the drive here, I was thinking about how you told me after like that was decided that you had a book on how to be a good bridesmaid something like that.
It was very heteronormative, I remember, yes. When I was reading it.
Yeah,
well, it was funny because the book was like, your friend's probably going to be freaking out the whole time. She's definitely a bridezilla. And just get ready to deal with a lot of bullshit. But that wasn't it at all. Like, you were insanely calm throughout your whole wedding process. And
yeah,
you didn't. I think you made a point to not let anyone else be stressed out, like, at all.
Yeah.
Right?
It was a no stress rule.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Did you feel stressed?
No. The only things that stressed me out had nothing to do with the wedding. It was just like...
Oh, right. Like your work or something.
The wedding wasn't really stressful. And you like blessed our rings
before.
Oh, yes. Did a little like witch ceremony and yeah. It was really fun.
It felt very secretive because you guys got married in front of everybody. But I feel like the real wedding took place backstage with you and Jack. Jack is Hallie's husband. Privately in a little tiny room, right?
In a closet.
And we like got out the Palo Santo and like I said a prayer and bound you guys really by witchcraft. Like your marriage is bound by
that
witchcraft.
That was when it happened, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
How does Jack feel about that?
I think he loved it.
Oh, great.
We both loved it. It was great. our path to being friends is the most bizarre and continually bizarre, just like, I don't know, very bound by coincidence.
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually don't know if I believe in like karma and past lives and that kind of stuff, but the way that our families intersect is very strange.
Yeah.
So Hallie's brother Ben, I went to college with, and we were friends, and Hallie came up to visit once and I met her and she was really cool. And I remember Ben was always like, my sister's really cool. Like, you have to get to know my sister.
Which he would never say to my face.
No, he would never say that to your face. And you came to visit Los Angeles, and I think I said this like in my toast to you guys, but I was like, I know Hallie's coming, so she's really cool, so I've got to be really cool. And I remember deliberately being like, I'm gonna be cool person, like I'm gonna let go of all my insecurities and just be cool because otherwise she won't accept me. So.
Well, even before we hung out individually, you came to my family's Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And like, we didn't super connect.
No,
like,
we didn't.
You were a little bit shy. Your brother was there. Like,
it was kind of,
you were definitely my brother's friend.
Yes.
And so then, I don't know. I guess I think when I moved to New York, you left a message on my phone just telling me that you thought it was cool that I moved to New York. And then when I finally visited LA, we hung out and like, that was more like, oh, instant friends.
Yeah.
Don't even remember that you're my brother's friend.
Yeah.
And then 2 years into living in Los Angeles, I moved and I told you where my new apartment was. And you were like, that's where my mom lives.
Yeah. It was so bizarre.
So I live right next to Ariana's mom. Yeah.
You moved into my mother's apartment complex.
Yeah.
But it's even more...
Like, I see them walk by my window every day.
But it's even crazier than that because that year before you moved in, we would hike every weekend. And as we were doing that, you were writing a book with your mother called
What to Do When I'm Gone.
Out everywhere. This is a great plug.
Yeah.
Which is, would you like to plug what the book is?
It's a book I wrote with my mom out of a desperate fear of her dying. And she's a really funny writer. So we wrote a book together that I illustrated that is, meant to, I guess, lead someone who's lost their mother through the rest of their life without their mom. And it's way funnier and less... horrible than it sounds.
But it's also really sweet and touching.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're real. It's serious instructions.
My mom is very healthy. She's fine, but it is it is real. Anyway, so
you spent the whole year, right? Yeah. I mean, I was with you as you were painstakingly making this insane, like, we were like watercoloring the book, right? Was that
gouache
the main?
Is the what's type it called? Of paint
it's
that
called
I used.
Wash?
Gouache.
Oh, gouache. Goodness.
Actually, the word is G-O-U-C-H-E, and I used to call it gouache. I didn't even know how to say it.
That's so dominant to be doing a kind of art and not pronounce it right
I
and
know.
Be really good at it anyway.
I know.
So anyway, I like saw you doing this project for so long and I was like, man, I wish I was close to my mom. I just hadn't been that close to her in many years. And then when you were done, immediately you were like, oh, I'm moving. And you moved in with my mom. And I remember thinking like, I'm going to have to be closer to my mom now because
yeah.
Hallie is one of my best friends and I see her every week. So now I'm going to have to see my mom every week.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, our relationship has, me and my mom, our relationship has gotten better since you forced me to get to know her. Be more close with her.
It's crazy.
It's really crazy. Yeah. And then the other thing that was weird was we found out that Ben, your brother, and my brother in San Francisco actually live a block away from each other without meaning to either.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like our families are weirdly like bound.
There's
some
kind of thing going on there.
Yeah. Do you think you're my guardian angel? That's a weird power dynamic.
No, I don't think that at all. Because they could just as easily you be my guardian angel. I
we
think
can
we're
both
just
be each other's guardian.
I think we're just like
friends?
Magical buddies. I think we're just, I think we're just buddies with like a lot more going on than just because I there's like this phrase that's like there people are friends for like a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And so it's always interesting when you make a friend and
where
you're,
does that come from? That sounds like a bird song or something.
My friend's Adia's mom. Said it,
wow.
But I think it's a thing.
I almost got goosebumps
a reason,
when
a season, or a lifetime. And sometimes you can look back and be like, oh, we were only friends because living in this city was really hard and we needed to be together. And then you move away and you realize that was only the reason that you were together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I don't know. Our story is interesting because, like, you had an entire segment of your life where you were friends with another Bateman and you guys were really close friends. What if in a few years Nick is your bestie?
Like, I don't know how I would deal with that. But Nick is Hallie's much younger.
My other brother. Anyway, just it's,
I mean, I want to knock them all out.
Totally,
I want to knock out each sibling
totally.
And make sure I drain them of all their life force
it's
for
very,
myself.
It's very interesting, and I'm excited to see where it goes. I feel like
me
it's
too.
Like a it's full of surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think something I really appreciate you about you is how willing you are to try different things that kind of push the boundaries of what it means to be alive, you know? Like, you're willing to take risks and...
Not physically, though.
Not I don't know if that's totally true.
I won't
well, not
do
anymore.
A physical extreme. Like, I don't want to jump off anything or climb up anything.
Well, I was talking to you about this before we started, but, like, I was thinking about the monastery, basically, that you were at.
Yeah, the you know? Meditation retreat. But that's
just like sort of physical, no?
That is it is physical, but all I mean is to say I'm not a risk taker when it comes to, like, my life.
Oh, like a daredevil.
I'm a risk taker when it's like I was talking to someone recently about scuba diving and they were kind of trying to convince me that I could scuba dive and I was like, let me be totally clear, I don't have any interest in scuba diving. Like, I'm terrified of the ocean, I don't want to do anything like that. But like, when it comes to emotional or creative boundaries, those are the things
right.
I'm totally
you're an emotional daredevil.
I'm an emotional daredevil. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I think like so what Ariana's referring to, there is a set of meditation centers around the world called Vipassana. And I heard about this from like my most hippie college friend who went to one, and it's like a 10-day silent retreat. So you go to this place and it's actually free, like it's donation based. So they house you, they feed you, you meditate for 10 days, and like they take away your phone, your notebook, your like for me, my sketchbook, everything. And you're just silent and you learn how to meditate and try not to go crazy. And in 2015, I believe, I decided to go to one. And yeah, it was like very, it was like a boot camp of my insides. Like, it was like
Had you done much meditation before that?
No.
Wow.
And I find it very difficult. And I'm trying to remember what I think my point when I started to talk about it was that, like, when I made the decision to go to the meditation retreat, I was very amused by the fact that there's no way I could come out of this the same person as I was before. Like, I'm very interested in doing things where, like, that's going to change your life. Who knows how, but it definitely will. And that'll be interesting. Mm. Like, so, yeah, I mean, it did definitely change my life.
How did it feel? How do you feel it changed your life? Do you remember the arc of it all?
Yeah, I do. I wrote a comic about it that, if you want to read, it goes into more depth on BuzzFeed. The title's something about silent meditation retreat. But basically, I went in and they, like, took everything away, and I immediately had, like, very bad separation anxiety from my sketchbook, because I draw every day and saw this as an experience. Like, I like to document everything, and immediately I was like, oh shit, how am I gonna remember everything that happens? And then
that was within the first day you were feeling that way.
Yes, immediately when they, because I didn't really realize how much they have you hand everything over. Like, you just have, like, your clothes. And so, yeah, I immediately felt, like, separation anxiety. And then we go into this hall where it's just, like, a big kind of, like, gymnasium. This was in Massachusetts. And everyone sits down on, like, these pillows, and the meditations are all on a video screen led by some dead guy that, like, you founded this retreat or something. I'm not talking very eloquently about it, but so the dead guy's talking, and, like, the first impression is very much like, I'm in a cult. This is really scary. So there's some, you have to, like, swallow that feeling, which is, I'm particularly scared of joining a cult by accident, because I think that thing of, like, well, this will change my life. Right, right. Like, that's what people who join cults are looking for. Yeah. So,
or a feeling of, like, here, finally.
I know. Yeah, because we're all looking for that.
I can give away my agency.
Yeah. So I kind of had to swallow that, like, that suspicion in order to actually learn anything that they were talking about. And then once I did that, basically the entire thing is not really about, like, it's not like, oh, this is going to change your life, you're going to get rich, or whatever they might promise. It was very much, like, based in the body. So the meditation practice was, like, start by like feeling the tip of your nose, and then for, like, 3 days you just feel you sit there for, like, 8 hours a day, and you have little breaks, like, between, but basically hours and hours and hours you're just instructed to, like, think and feel the tip of your nose. And then they go further to, like, feeling your breath, and then feel, like, it kind of expands, and from the days, like, you go, the meditation goes through your body. And then for the first few days I just completely didn't really do any of what they were instructing, because my mind was just exploding. I was not speaking any words to anyone, so my mind was just like, and then that time in second grade, and then that time in college, and then that girl who did that, and who said that, and then this said that, and then what were you thinking about that? And, like, it was just I exhausted my mind. I literally went through every memory, every person, every feeling attached to those relationships. Like, I just went through everything, and then I thought every thought that I could, and then I basically ran out. And then that's when I started to actually meditate, because the silence forced me to, like, you can't talk even in your room. You have a roommate. I lived with a girl, slept in the same room with her, and didn't speak to her for 10 days.
Would you look at each other? Did you feel like you could acknowledge each other? Not really.
It was such a private experience. It was it was so internal, and it was so weird. And then we would have these breaks where, like, before meals or after meals, we would walk out and we could kind of pace this lawn. And we would, like, just not talk, but a bunch of people just walking kind of around this, like, little forest trail lawn. And that was really kind of my saving, like, that kind of kept me from going insane, was just, like, being able to, like, be outside. And I really, like, focused on, like, the bugs that I saw and stuff. And eventually I think I did I think I talked to myself. I'm trying to remember.
Out loud?
I talked to myself out loud, even though it was not allowed. And I would like make myself laugh and stuff. Mm. Like I would, because there was like at night and stuff, there would really not be anyone out there. Mm. So I would walk around and I would just like tell the story of what had happened that day or what I had felt. And I would just say it out loud to myself. And I knew I was kind of cheating, but it was like very soothing to me. And I was desperately trying to implant everything in my mind because I knew I wanted to write about this experience. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to, I didn't log have any it. Trust in my mind to hold on to ideas because I write everything down and I always have a sketchbook there or a phone or something. So I basically was like, oh my God, if I don't say this, if I don't repeat this story 10 times to myself about my thought in the dining hall this morning, like I'm not going to remember it and I'm not going to be able to like write it down later. So I was kind of like obsessively note keeping in my mind. And then the meditation, as the days went on, got really interesting. It was like, went from me not even really trying to like feeling a wave of sensation going from like my nose to my toes and back. And like, it was all about like, I'm trying to remember, like, obviously I'm not really much of a meditator in my life right now, because it's not fresh on my mind. But basically you would like use your mind to travel around your body. And you would feel a prickle of pain somewhere, and you would stay on that prickle of pain until it dissipated, and then you would move on. And then once you were in the flow of this, you like feel your, you can eventually like feel your entire body like tingle in this really crazy way. And by the end of it, I was like, kind of like, I'm so good at this. And it's really funny to
So you became a master.
Well, I think I just, I like, once I mastered the tingle, like, I remember, like, so the last day, one of the most interesting parts of it was when everyone suddenly got released to talk. It was that, wild.
It would be, like, coming up from the bottom of the ocean, I feel like.
Yeah. So we were all in the hall on the last day, and I don't know, they were like, all right, talk now. People kind of started to just, like, like grow until the hall was like full of the sound of people talking, and they were, everyone was strangers, so I think everyone was just like, hi, talk to me. And then at lunch that day, I spoke to a woman who had the retreat booked for her by a friend as a gift.
Oh boy.
She brought sunglasses in a swimsuit.
Oh,
and
God,
thought that it was
no.
A
what
fancy yoga retreat by the sun.
That's
and this
so
and
funny.
This girl arrived and was like, I'm in a fucking cult. I have to get out of here. She was so freaked out for like the first 2 days. She didn't know what to do. She was like going to call the cops. Like she didn't have a car. She didn't have a way to get out. Her friend pranked
so
her like
funny.
Hardcore.
That's so funny. To wonder if this woman like talks a lot in the relationship and the woman like.
I don't know. She was really, she was like this awesome like British filmmaker, and she was like, yeah, it was a cool experience, but like she thought that she was going to be drinking mimosas by a pool. So that was, it was wild to find out what people had gone into it with. Another woman,
that's like a sitcom for that to have happened.
Yeah.
To that woman.
Yeah, another woman had been recently married, and part of her deal with her husband was that he had to go on this retreat too. Which I get, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But so her husband was there, and they both did it as like a, I don't know, she wanted him to get where she was coming from.
Wow.
With her meditation. And then that night, like the final night, my roommate and I stayed up the entire night talking.
Wow.
Like she was just this young woman who was like kind of around my age, like wanting to make art. And we both, you know, had been silent for 10 days and had been through remarkably similar like experiences. Mm. So we just like talked for the entire night. Mm. And it was really interesting. And like a really cool part of it. And then, yeah. And then I went home and my mind did hold on to everything. Mm. And then I wrote a piece about it. And then kept up my practice for a few months. I kind of like tapered off, but it, mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel. I do kind of want to go back, but
yeah,
I don't know how.
Where are you at now in terms of,
well,
like, do you have like a meditation practice or spiritual practice or anything like that?
I would say that our hiking every Sunday is probably the closest thing that I have had to that. And, you know, ironically, because I think I'm someone who's lent to extremes. So like a 10-day thing where you're forced to meditate was really appealing to me because I struggle to do that in my daily life. And what I don't really love about the Vipassana way or whatever, they're like, you can't use any other type of meditation. You'll corrupt the stuff that you're doing. And it has to be an hour in the morning and an hour at night. And it's just like, I was able to keep it up for a while, but like, I don't know, that's a lot.
It's a lot of discipline.
It's a lot. So yeah, I don't really have a meditation practice now, and I feel guilty about it a lot.
Interesting. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to read the tarot of Hallie Bateman. Welcome back to What's Your Deal? We are about to read the tarot of Hallie Bateman. Hallie, what are you thinking about for your question today?
So, I have a really specific thing that I want to ask
here,
about.
Shuffle them while you're...
And I was thinking about how you're like always like the more specific, the better. So I tried to think of something very specific. On Friday, I am going to a high school to participate in like a career day type of thing where I answer questions from teens about my work. I've done that before and I'm terrified of teenagers and they do not give a shit about... Like, I think my job is cool. I don't know if they do. And I don't know how to, like, communicate effectively or, like, not be scared of them. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask about that.
Okay. What's the are you going to be, like, in an auditorium? Or
we're going to be in, like, an auditorium at different tables. And then teens will, like, come around and, like, ask.
Okay.
And
I see. So you'll be sitting there almost, like, at a booth or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, the time I did something like the school visit before, it was kind of like a teacher like forcing teens to ask questions. And it was very humbling. It was very humbling. And I want to communicate my enthusiasm for my work in a way that is like genuine to me. And I feel like I often like am so scared of teenagers that I'm like try to play it cool.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you want to be,
yeah.
So you're looking for ways to stay authentic. Even if the external reaction doesn't seem to be landing.
Totally.
Right?
Which is honestly like, that's representative of like what it's like to be an artist in any ways.
Right.
So many people don't give a shit about your work. And how do you want to respond to that? Do you want to just like shut yourself down and pretend like, oh yeah, I don't think what I do is cool either. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I want you to cut the deck with your left hand into three separate piles and then go ahead and put them back together in any order that you choose. Gonna say a brief prayer over these cards. So, oh my gosh, we're starting with the Five of Cups, leading into the reverse Ten of Cups, and finally the Star.
Ooh,
how beautiful. What a spread you have.
What a dichotomy.
I know,
here.
I love this dichotomy. So, the first card in the past position is the Five of Cups, which you've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's the figure in the long black shroud who's staring at his cups that have fallen over, even as two cups remain behind him, but this figure is very focused on these cups that have spilled. So I mean, I know you personally, and I know you had actually a difficult time in school,
mm-hmm.
socially,
mm-hmm.
so it's triggering to go back to school.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
There's a part of you that still is disappointed that you didn't have a better experience in school, you know?
Yeah.
You had maybe expectations about friends or whatever it is, what a social experience is supposed to be like, and that simply didn't happen, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that was that can lead to obviously disappointment. And so there is still some grief to be had about that, you know, like feeling as though something that every child should have somehow didn't wasn't a part of your life, and perhaps you're still feeling like there is something. If you could befriend these teens, it would.
If only they would accept me.
If only they would accept you, this part of yourself that still feels unlovable or something like that would finally be healed.
Yeah. Literally on the way here, I was like, what could I wear that would make him think that I was cool?
Well, you know, expectations is going to get you every time.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of what the Five of Cups is about, is to you know, the acceptance of the past and grief and all that kind of stuff, of that lack of that, just missing that emotional boat, basically, that you had hoped for. But there's a freedom in moving on from that. You know what I mean? There's a freedom now as you turn to the Two Cups that remain, and the Two of Cups always means connection. You actually have the ability now to not go back in time, but you have the chance to heal yourself by not having expectations this time.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? So you get to walk back into this experience and into this, you know, place without a wall around your heart. You actually get to kind of walk in and be like, well, I'm just going to be myself and not have any expectations at all.
Yeah, that's a nice idea.
Well, I think it's very possible. In the present position is the reverse Ten of Cups. So to me, oh, okay, I see. So tens usually indicate ends of cycles, and cups is about emotions and your heart and love and imagination, all that kind of stuff. So you're very, and for it to be reversed is like, you're almost there. Like this is the step into letting go and integrating this kind of past pain and all that kind of stuff.
Can I shed some more light on this?
Sure, yes.
Card?
Yes, she's pointing to the card in the past.
Shrouded black figure. Character. When I think about I totally think you nailed something with like feeling grief over my own experience. And that's probably why going to schools is so scary. Mm-hmm. Part of mixing that with my professional life, like I'm not just going to a school as myself. I'm going to a school as my professional role. Mm-hmm. And like sometimes when I reach a professional milestone, like I like announce that I'm working on a new book or something, there is a dark part of me that I believe is this character that's like, they're gonna see that and they're gonna know. And they're going to regret that
they were wrong for rejecting me.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that. I think that's a lot of what artists are doing. It's a big part of being successful is telling the past people to go fuck themselves.
Yeah. I think that they just, there's no certain individual that's that I'm trying to screw over,
right,
or whatever. But I think there is a drive to go back and with my work rewrite who you saw me as. I was this
the whole time.
Yeah.
Big girl.
Yeah. Anyway,
well, I think
and I do have I was actually talking about this in, I think I told you how in therapy I went through imagined revenge with my therapist. Like, I feel like revenge is very healing for me. This is, sounds bad, but allow me to explain.
I think a lot of people kind of understand that.
In therapy, I was talking about how angry I am at like certain men from my past, and how like my best friend Alice, who's like a very sunny person, was like, why don't you just forgive and forget? Just get over it. What's the point in holding on to that? And I was like, I will never let go. And then I was telling my therapist about that, and she was like, well, why don't we take this to its, you know, natural conclusion? Why don't you tell me what would make you feel better about these? And there was literally like a little kid in my preschool class.
Oh my God.
Who locked me in a bathroom.
Oof.
And she was like, what would have made you feel better about that? And I was like, I would like to kick open the bathroom door, walk over and punch him in the face. So like I, in my mind, went out and punched a preschooler in the face, and it felt so good. And I told my therapist how good that felt. And she's like, yeah, like not everyone is a forgive and forget. That doesn't work for everyone. So what works for me is getting imaginary revenge. And she was like, why don't you write down all the men you're angry at and then imagine your revenge and we'll do that next time. And then I did write a whole list of men that I was angry at and I imagined revenge. One guy, I just stood on him for a while. Another guy, I almost hit him with my car, but I didn't. Like, it was like a lot of stuff like that. Like, I don't want to kill anyone in my even imagination, but I do want to like
spook them a little.
And so anyway, I'm just giving some context to like, whatever this healing journey is, how can we work with my special need?
Well, I would take it even one step further with your therapist is that a lot of times what Alice is talking about of just wanting to just forgive and forget is something that we call spiritual bypassing.
Ooh.
And it's where you try to hop ahead of your own process because, you know, which honestly, the people that have harmed you hope you'll do. Like, they hope that you'll just simply never be angry. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You'll never actually express basically the consequences of their actions. They, you know, there's the hope that you'll just, why don't you just forgive and forget? It's like, you have to be angry first. Like, that's a crucial part of forgiving and forgetting.
You have to be angry for 29 years.
You have to be angry for 29 years. Well, that's repressed anger, right? This is actually what your therapist is doing, I think, is extremely helpful. Like, there has to be a moment of actually expressing the
she
anger.
She called it, like, closing the loop.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the order to me, I think it is the same as grief. If someone harms you, I think there's denial, then you feel angry, then there's probably the bargaining process, and then maybe there's the forgiving and forgetting. But the forgiving and forgetting doesn't necessarily mean that the person is absolved. It's just that, you know,
they don't matter anymore. Maybe
it's not something that has that is you're not giving your personal power away to them, which a lot of times repressing your anger can do. Expressing anger doesn't give your power away, which I think a lot of people misinterpret, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why people are like, let's just forgive and forget. Don't be angry. But like being angry is so important. It's so important.
Yeah.
But to me, at least, being actually angry and yelling or whatever it needs doesn't have to be at the person, but actually expressing it is so important. I think anger needs to be appreciated. So I think anger should be put in a position where it's appreciated, which a lot of times isn't going to be the person that made you angry because they want to pretend like
exactly
they didn't do it. And I think something for your need, quote, needs with revenge, I think that's very healthy. And like, I actually do think it's going to lead to forgiveness that doesn't necessarily like, again, absolve anybody, but you do forgive them.
Maybe I have to just forgive a school. Like, maybe I have to go up in front of the high school and just say, in my mind, I'm burning you down.
Honestly, like, I've done stuff like, I've gone to old houses where I've experienced trauma and literally, like, done.
Wow.
Which is a little crazy. I'm now, since I realize I'm saying it out loud, but I've, like, done, like, little spells in front of old houses and tried to release the feeling. Really glad the people in the house didn't see a witch standing outside casting a spell. But I think you're having a healthy process, and the next step is to truly believe that nothing that these people were doing was personal to you. Like, it just wasn't.
Yeah.
They were in their own little worlds. They were like undeveloped children and didn't even like see you as a person. And anything that happens now when you go to this school is not going to be personal either. As long as you're coming from an authentic place and you can remember that you're a lovable person that deserves to exist on this planet, there's any rejection, quote, rejection feeling is going to be kind of an illusion based on their own projection of whatever is going on with them. And they're probably really unhappy because they're in school.
Right.
So their lives suck.
Yeah.
Don't forget that their lives suck. So if they treat you in any kind of way, it's because they're under duress and have to go to school and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
It's still triggering, though.
Yeah.
So you can like hang into that. But to me, to see this in the present position means that you're starting to reach the ceiling of whatever pain you may have felt for many years, you know?
Yeah.
Because then is the star after that.
And what is that?
In the future position, the star is hope and peace. The star is a new way.
The star is a naked woman pouring water from an urn into a pool, and then there's bunch of stars.
And there's a bunch of stars, and she's pouring water back into the pool and onto the ground.
Oh.
So it almost appears as though she's wasting it. But there's a sense of like abundance with that. Like there's always going to be more love. You know what I mean? It's like a fantasy almost. Like she's standing on the water and not falling into the pool.
Right.
So there's this sense of fantastical. This is the sense of hope that you feel. The star is just a very beautiful card. It's just the sense of hope you feel when you might not have any reason, material reason for it.
Right.
It's the light at the end of the tunnel, but like not a train.
Yeah.
It's the North Star. So it comes along to say like, this is truly, let this star guide you through this next part in your emotional.
Wow.
A new emotional cycle is occurring. So follow this star through, pass through this portal, you know? Pass through this portal into the next phase in your life where you are loved forever. Like there's really no chance ever again of someone coming along and telling you that you're unlovable. That's just not going to happen ever again. That's the star. The star comes along to with a promise of that.
Wow.
If you can accept your mission. Also, I also want to say the star is very much like a celebrity card. So step into this role of the star. Like I think people are, that's something too, is take responsibility for your own power.
Yeah.
You may feel weird about yourself, but you're a really accomplished illustrator and someone that a lot of people look up to. So it's important to stay grounded in that role and really, you know, be comfortable with
Here's a way that I could think about it is, if I was in school and they had like a career day like this, I would have loved to see someone who was making art and talk to them about it. And like, maybe I can, the healing part can be like, which one of these kids,
little Hallie,
like me,
yeah.
You're right, is miserable.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know. Yeah, it could be like, oh, it gets better. Yeah.
Go back and she's in the crowd.
Yeah.
So you're going to find her and look her in the eyes.
Wow.
She may not look back the way you want her to, but.
I mean, if I'm being honest, like my high school self probably would be so scared of me now that I wouldn't talk to me.
You could even say the stuff you're saying there.
Yeah.
You know, like you can say, gosh, I really wish someone had come and talked to me about art. I was so upset. I felt so under duress. School sucks. You can say all this. You can literally by you talking about your experience in high school, there are going to be people in the crowd that will relate to that.
I wonder if the man will shut me down.
Who's the man?
I don't know.
The principal?
Yeah.
You're more powerful. The principal wishes he was you.
Right. I was thinking about, I make these like, I have a card printer, like a ID card printer. Ariana actually has helped me many times printing this product that I make called Artistic Licenses, where people like commission one, I'll draw their portrait and like write their answers to a few questions, and then I print it on like an actual card. And I was thinking about printing like paper versions for the career fair. And then I was like, is that too dorky?
Like, oh boy.
But it could give me a way to talk to people with
also
more.
Also, like, let people feel free to feel that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
If you feel like it's dorky, like, let a dork feel safe.
Yeah.
Make the cool kids feel uncomfortable.
It's just, you know how, like, when you're a teen, like, unabashed enthusiasm about anything is, like, not cool?
Right.
I think that's what the hang up is, but I think if I should let my freak flag fly.
Absolutely, because the thing is, you are successful, so you're cool. When you're when you're enthusiastic in middle school or high school, you're just a high schooler, but you're actually a professional, enthusiastic person.
Right.
So
yeah,
don't forget.
I think enthusiasm is great.
Yeah, of course.
I'm really enthusiastic about it.
This is a good practice. I don't think it's cool. Shit, you didn't learn anything. You didn't learn anything from what we just did here. Is there anything else that you want to plug?
That's coming up? Let's see.
How can people find you?
You can find me at HallieBateman.com or on Instagram at Halith Bates.
Halith.
Not my name, but it's just something I made up in 2007. Halith Bates. And yeah, my book is called What to Do When I'm Gone, and it's good, and you should read it with your mom.
Where can they buy it? Where can they find it?
You can find it on Amazon or order it from your local bookstore or just get it anywhere that books are sold.
And people can purchase artistic licenses too.
Yes.
Right? Are those up
so
for sale?
I have a shop where you can buy your own artistic license and lots of other stuff.
Yeah, you have like a ton of prints and
I have a lot of prints. I have a Patreon called the Super Art Club, which is like one of my favorite things lately. And yeah.
And my favorite print of yours is the print that says it's a miracle we ever met. Where it has all the people like, I think you know that that's everyone's obsessed with that one.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out. That's one of my favorite ones. Thanks for coming on, Hallie.
You're welcome.
This is helpful.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody. We will see you next time.